everybody, and welcome back to The Therapy Show. This is episode 12. That means this is the end of the season of The Therapy Show. Oh.
I know, so sad.
It's a little sad. But hey, we're happy to be here, and we're bringing you a final episode on a topic we think is important. Of course, it's me, Scott Johnson. I know nothing. It's Wendy. She knows lots of things. Hello, Wendy.
Hello.
I have something to play for you since you're in Sweden now. So enjoy this. By the way, my full disclosure, it's my sister. She's a therapist. She helps real people with real problems. I just record this damn thing. This is going to be your new theme on your therapy segment on the morning stream. This is what it'll sound like when you tell us about Swedish words. Okay, so here's that. There you go. Bringing it back.
Okay. You know yodeling is not Swedish, right?
I know, but it's the best I could do because all the other stereotypes didn't have like the quality of whatever. And there is some yodeling in Sweden, by the way. I looked all this up.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Swedish chef. I mean, that's like the epitome, right?
Yeah, but I didn't want to use hints and stuff without getting in trouble. That other thing is like open source, like old music that nobody has a copyright on. So it seemed perfect. But yeah.
Got it. If you look up
Swedish yodel, whoops. Swedish yodeling, there is a ton of it.
Oh.
Yodeling, Wikipedia, similar to the Swiss yodel, and then they go on to explain why it's different. Anyway.
Interesting. Okay.
Whatever. That, you know, it's Scandinavia. People all do the same weird stuff at some point. Anyway, hey, welcome back to The Therapy Show, everybody. We've really enjoyed this season. I hope you guys have too. We're going to take you out on a topic that I'm actually a little surprised we didn't hit earlier, because it's one that comes up all the time, I think, in people's conversations. It certainly comes up here and there on the morning stream segment we do. And it's come up kind of here and there on this series, sort of depending on the context. But we are going to talk about the difference or the arguments or the things surrounding the idea of nature versus nurture and what it means to, on very simple levels, grow up in a family where everybody seems like they've got it all on board and everyone's doing great except one kid. Why is that different? I have real questions about that. You know, like why, if you've got, let's say you got four kids in your family, all three hardworking, good grades, ideas for what their future should be, good moral people, just trying to do the right thing. And there's the fourth who's just a total rat, is just mean to everyone. The one that gets into drugs and alcohol in high school, the one that cheats on tests, the one, you know, whatever the black, you know, the whole black sheep thing. And this argument as to whether or not that person is part of the same nurture, or if there's something different going on with him and those who are to be nurturing him, or if there is just a straight up, he came packaged this way sort of scenario going where it's got nothing to do with nurture or genetics, or maybe, you know, it is genetics, but he's just missing a marker or whatever. I want to get into all that stuff. But where do you start? It's a big topic, nature and nurture.
So this is hilarious because, everyone, hi. I suggested the topic, and it's very different from what Scott just said.
Is it different than that?
Well, we can still talk about those things because it's interesting. I think I emailed you the old nature nurture argument.
Yeah.
And you go there to like your experience, right? Your everyday.
I always do, though.
Hey,
I always
kids,
do.
Whatever. Sure. Right. But maybe I didn't clarify, but of course it's because of the circumstance I'm in. I am really interested lately in how environment impacts the development of a culture, how language impacts ways of thinking, because I'm living in a totally different place, feeling like I'm under a totally different sky than I've ever been under before. Literally, like it's raining every day.
Yeah.
But also, as I'm learning a new language, realizing certain aspects of that language and how they convey certain concepts and things, it's just, I would never do it that way in English sometimes, you know? So it's just intriguing. Like, do I actually think different thoughts because I speak English? It's my native tongue versus someone who speaks another language. And then, you know, how do you test this? I mean, it's so complicated. So we will talk about nature.
Well, like, okay, but how about this question then that goes further or more closer to what you're saying? If I'm raised in a German family,
yeah,
am I going to be more, am I going to be more angry and exacting than I would if I grew up in a language or a family where the language spoken doesn't have a lot of harshness to its sound or even to its meaning. There aren't words for things like douchebag or whatever. That's a bad example, but you know what I mean? Is that okay?
Right. Well, yeah. And we can talk about that. I think a good way to start this is I have a friend here who is American.
Yeah.
And, I asked her for some ideas for the show cause she's a listener. And she said, she would like us to talk about this idea of, so she's American, married to a Swede, and they raised their children here. So they've been here 12 years. Their oldest is, I think, 10. And they have four kids, and they have this conversation. If we had raised our son in America, who would he be versus who he is because he's been raised in Sweden? So one example she gave, and I think is an interesting one here, there's a high stress on equality.
Yeah.
And it's a very collective mentality as opposed to individuals are the most important thing and bootstrapping, you know, the American dream and all that jazz. This is very much like what's best for one is best for all and follow rules and sort of don't stick out too much. There is actually a word. I know I should save this for the Thursday show, which I'll use again. Don't you mind?
Yeah, it'll come up again. Don't
recycling.
Worry.
Recycling.
Sure.
But it's called Jantelagen.
Oh, it wow.
Means, I know. Check me out.
Yeah.
It means it's a law, essentially, that you don't get to think you're the shiz.
Really?
Yeah. Like, you don't think you're better than other people. Like, it's so ingrained in.
Wait, that's a in the books law, they can enforce this as a.
Yeah. So they're that's what I've heard.
Weird.
And Lagan means law, but I think how it translates, like we met a guy who we were buying a car. So we met lots of random Swedes all over trying to buy a car. Mm-hmm. And the guy is a builder and he builds homes and he builds bathrooms and does remodeling and stuff. And he and his wife, you know, would love to go to the States and just live there a little bit, you know, because people, every time we tell them what we're doing, they're like, oh, we want to do that. You know, it's, I think it's a normal response from a lot of people like, oh, cool. I wish we could do that. Yeah. But he's, and one of the reasons he wants to is that he has to wear his work clothes and drive sort of a normal to crappy car or he won't get a bid. So someone who's all fancy is just not trusted. So we have such the opposite experience.
Well, we do, but we don't, do we? Or at least maybe some of that's changing because I also don't trust a guy in a too fancy of a car and too nice of a suit when it deals with me trying to sell a house or me trying to buy a house. Like it kind of rubs me that way too. Maybe I'm unique and maybe overall culture doesn't feel that way, but I definitely feel that way. I freaking hate it because it just means, oh, what are you trying to do here? Show me how much of the commission you're taking from my sale.
See, and I think as the one percenters have become the one percenters or like there's a bigger gap, wealth distribution. I think it's more what you're experiencing has become more common because before when it wasn't a huge, huge gap, it was like, wow, I want the guy who's successful to tell me how to spend my money as a financial planner. Yeah, right. Yeah. Or the realtor obviously is doing a good job selling homes because he can drive a Beamer or whatever.
Yeah.
I think I agree. I think that's shifted for sure.
Maybe what it reminds me of like when we used to be suckers for commercials, like commercials would come on TV and you would actually sort of buy into it because, well, obviously this is this medium where no one's lying to me. I mean, this all sounds like real stuff in the '50s and sixties or whatever. And then you just start to go, yeah, right. Yeah, like all your dishwasher liquid's the same and you're all a bunch of freaking, you're just trying to make me laugh because now there's a trend to be all funny because that gets us interested. And now it's slick and fancy camera work because you want us to buy your car, but not talking about what's in it anymore. Like you did in the '50s, you just keep changing it and nobody trusts ads anymore, period.
Right. Or wants to watch them.
Or wants to watch them. Yeah.
Does not want to.
Well, because once you're not buying into them and realize they're not in your best interest, then you find yourself going, well, this is also not entertaining.
Right. But it's also fun to watch kids watch commercials because they don't ever get exposed to them on the average, you know, because they're not watching normal TV generally.
That's true.
And they are like, oh, I must have that thing.
Yeah.
Like they're still suckers. They're, you know, they haven't had any training. So they just think it's truth being spoken.
Well, kids consuming a lot of YouTube, they get little 15-second mid-rolls and things like that but it's such a different exposure. I mean, we were seeing things on Saturday mornings while we were trying to watch cartoons that were just making us beg parents for whatever the thing was.
I need the G.I. Joe, whatever.
Anyway, and now I realize, my gosh, they're taking advantage of kids in like the worst possible way, you know? Anyway.
Right. And it was the only time we were a captive audience. Yeah. Okay, so we digress. So that idea here is very different. So this builder was saying, you know, I have to sort of be grubby for me to get any business. And I would love to have an opportunity to sort of not play the Swedish game for business here. That's what he was saying. And, you know, so this friend was saying, you know, her son is, he doesn't want to stick out. He really feels that equality thing very strongly. And, you know, there's no shining and I'm number one or whatever. That's not going on. And she feels very American. She feels very American in Sweden. She speaks perfect Swedish, but, you know, doesn't feel like she is Swedish, still feels very American and still connected to that. And, you know, so that dynamic is very strong. So they have this debate. If we had raised him in America, would we have a totally different kid?
Yeah.
Who maybe doesn't struggle with this or that, or it does, you know, maybe struggles with different things. So anyway, it was her idea for the show because, you know, they're thinking of moving to the States. And, you know, are wondering like, well, will this alter the course of their life in some ways? And probably, because you're going to be exposed to more things. But it does it really fundamentally change your personality? I think is a good question.
Yeah. And like, see, this is the kind of experimenting you can't actually do, or even if you could do, it may not be ethically good to do it.
Yeah.
So even if you could, let's say you could raise a kid till five and get a good idea of what they'd be like in the Swedish household, but then go back and raise the kid till five again, like wipe their memory and refill it with whatever the version of the American upbringing or the British upbringing or whatever is. Obviously, we can't treat people like robots right. or machines, but behaviorally, that is a really interesting question. And you can't help. I mean, this is the essence of culture, isn't it? I mean, isn't that what you're describing? Is there is no if it's not different, then why are we so different? It has to be different.
Right. It has to be different. But I also think you have I think there's a feeling. In fact, I meant to look this up before, but there's a word in a language anyway. And it's like a word. And we've talked about this before. Or, you know, people talk about this. There's like 200 ways to say how something smells in Chinese, you know, like an acrid smell. Right. So we have acrid smell, but they have one word.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I just, that Kung is
Pao chicken.
From,
oh no.
Yeah. Like a chicken that's raw smells this way. A chicken that's cooked smells this way. Mm-hmm. So we have to combine words in order to create a concept that they have a one word for, because the concept of smell is, you know, extensive there. And if you think of how sort of scrubbed clean from smell, we try to be in the States anyway. Yeah, it seems like it. Yeah. I mean, we're big deodorant users, you know?
Yeah. We're big on, we're not running around enjoying each other's musk all day.
Yeah. The musk or the food, you know, maybe it's, we were on a walk in the forest today and Abe's like, it smells so earthy. And I was like, we don't have context for walks in the forest. So we would have language for certain times of year and the smell. And I don't know if Swedes do either. I assume they love their forest, but it really is like you're at a loss for words for an experience when it's new to you. But when you're surrounded by a bunch of smells in China, you're going to have words for the different things because it matters. Just like you would, what's a States thing? Where do we have extra words for things? It's not smells for sure. Anyway, but so language gets created with your experience, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, the cute Swedish farmhouses, they're all this red color. Well, the paint came from a dye they found in the hills somewhere and they added it to the blah, blah, blah. And then they paint the wood and it preserves the wood. That's why they can last so long. And it really is out of necessity and amazing. And it's distinct looking and now it's just fashionable. But it came from a place where it had to happen. Mm-hmm. Someone discovered it, changed their lives because it kept their houses safer longer and preserved or whatever. Anyway, so it's contextual. You have this environment that impacts you. So this kid, he's 10 years old, goes to school being told like, don't stick out. As a group, we all advance, yay. Or, you know, I don't exactly know what they say to kids in Sweden.
Right.
But that's the generalized feeling, at least, American mother sees her son having. And that is not what you get in the States in schools. You have, oh, he's advanced. Well, let's do a billion backbends and lots of things to make sure he gets, you know, way advanced and passes everybody, and maybe he should skip 10 grades. You know, there's just a hyper focus on individualism, success, and achievement, right? Mm-hmm. And there's some interesting language things, like in Italy, when they praise children as toddlers and, you know, young children, think about what you would praise an American child for.
Yeah.
In Italy, they praise kids for their social ability. So when they're engaging and funny and make eye contact and entertain and, you know, anything that seems social is socially advanced, they are clapping and cheering. And this
is that why the Italian stereotype is just, hey, Vincenzo, and they all talk over
must
each other.
Be.
Okay.
It must be. Yeah. Then also the, you know, in the States, we really emphasize achievement, like what you can do. And you can do a backbend. Awesome. You know, there's sort of a doing behavior or even having behaviors as opposed to some other distinct thing. So think about that. You're raised having a totally different emphasis. How does that then cause you sort of to develop your sense of self and then the culture around you?
Right. Now, can't this extend to things like, like, I have British friends who say they cannot stand the state of, like, the way people work in Britain. There's a lot of, in their, this is their words, in their estimation, a lot of laziness right now. People right. not showing up for stuff, not really caring, just kind of, meh, whatever, it is what it is. Kind of and you know, the one guy I talked to says, well, it's because we pay for everything here. And so nobody feels like they have to do anything. And right. whatever they do is the bare minimum, and it's just not a big deal, and nobody really cares about anything, and that it just has made that everyone just feel like a big impotent mess there. And he wishes he didn't live there because of this. Mm. But they're English, you know what I mean? Like, so they're speaking English, so are we. But over here, I'd say we have this hyper individualistic, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, anyone can do anything they want, you know, kind of mentality, but we're speaking the same language. So at some point the language peels off and it becomes other inputs, right? Like, it isn't just those right. words and what they mean.
Right. Because a different accent really can't be that strong.
Right.
But also you're getting to a really important point, which is that is some serious extrapolation, right? That language is connected directly to whether a country's productivity or not, right?
Right.
Or the current state of things, right? That's a stretch, which means it's so hard to tell. Like, how do you actually study this? Like you said, could this even be humane, right? Like,
yeah.
how do you isolate? And like anything, it's culture is, you know, it's complicated and it's complex, and there's variables that you can't really even account for, which is why the whole nature nurture argument, which is interesting. And this is maybe my answer to that is it's not as simple as language. But even though I do think the British, every minute they're talking there, I'm waiting for them to cuss. Is that weird?
Really? Why? Yeah. That is weird. Why do you say that?
Something about the sound of it. Like, I'm just waiting for it to get dirty.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
I love the British.
I mean, the British are having a thing right now in the States. Just speaking as someone who creates content on the internet, if you make a YouTube channel, and it doesn't even matter what the topic is, but whatever that topic is, you will corner that market if you have a British accent in this country.
I know. And they have such awesome voices.
It's so weird, though. I mean, it's so weird that we have put that accent in a place. Actually, all of the if you have an Irish accent, a British accent, or a Scottish accent. Mm-hmm. You're in, man. You're in like Flynn, and you're going to be the most popular dude on the planet right now. And right. I don't understand that exactly, but
well, it's because we think they're smarter,
I guess.
So high British accent specifically, we have a reaction that we would rate them as smarter. So there's studies to back this up, of course. And they're also like, if you have a Southern accent, you're assumed to be not as intelligent, a United States Southern accent,
yeah.
even though you can be the smartest guy in the room. Because of the cadence or the slowness or whatever. And people will perceive things a certain way. So in fact, when I moved to Sweden, I was a little worried that the world had become so homogenous. Like, oh, is there any culture left, you know? Because everyone on every plane speaks English. It just felt like America was just everywhere. right? Mm-hmm. Because it's pretty prolific as far as media, and you know, Bollywood has a form of Hollywood, but yeah. That's probably the second closest. You know what I mean? It's pretty.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah. So, but it's been so fun to be here and realize, like, no. No, that's so American to think that. Mm-hmm. Right? Culture is, you know, and everyone has, it's interesting here, they have an opinion about America because they know so much about it. And most of them have never been there, nor will ever go. Right?
Right.
But their music or their TV or their, you know.
We have proliferated.
Oh, absolutely. But they're still at a distance going, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, but and then not, have their it's, own not, it's not like we language. Have guys who go over there and go, all right, you guys, your job is to go over there and drive everyone nuts with American culture until they just accept it as the norm. It's on some level, they all want it. You know what I mean? They want our TV shows or they want our whatever it is. It's not like this stuff's being forced down their throat. Like for decades, Japanese teenagers dress like what they think the American teenagers are into. Well, it's not because we went over there and said, you must do this. It's post-war, everybody. Your job is now to be like us. They just wanted to.
Right. It's but weird. There is something about there's an openness with Americans that is not everywhere else, right? And so that openness also means, hey, this is our stuff and here it is.
Yeah.
And not all cultures are quite that open, but it's typically individuals pursuing something. And we have a high value of that in our culture. And right. Then we have a high value of make as much money as you can.
Right.
And in other cultures that, you know, it's collective. I mean, I'll take Sweden, for example. They have social welfare, of course. They see it as I pay taxes because, you know, that guarantees me a pension and healthcare. And, you know, we have people who are disabled and unable to ever contribute. And we need to take care of them. We're a group, right? But there is a work ethic here that's pretty astounding. I mean, they work hard and long hours, and they have very successful companies that are worldwide known, you know. And so there you have an interesting other dynamic of, you know, they have a social welfare state just like England does, but they view it very differently, maybe collectively. And not just that we know exactly how all Englanders perceive their situation, but so is it language? Is it food? Maybe there's, you know, beans on toast in England that's creating the problem. I don't know. So many factors. It's hard to tell.
Sure.
But I think, and let me get full circle back to this point. I think there's, and we talked about this on another segment about epigenetics, which is the expression of genes because nurturing allows them to be expressed. So the genes are nature, right? Mm-hmm. Born with all these sets of genes, there's sort of a thing right now, I'm too tired to remember the word, but it's coiled around the gene, and you can go through trauma. You can go through certain experiences. There's a lot of things that could happen. There could be sort of physical things that occur, stress, you name it, that exposes, sort of unwraps the protection around that gene. And then that gene gets expressed. So you can have depression start in somebody who has no family history. And you think, well, I thought it was genetic. Mm-hmm. Well, it is on some level an expressed gene that maybe had never been expressed in anyone previously, maybe because they've never been exposed to the same thing, like a trauma or an accident or something, you know, that really triggered that. And so I kind of think of that in a way sort of culturally. So this kid can live in Sweden and he has all sorts of things happening here that just sort of express what gets expressed in Sweden. Then they move to the United States. Is it like epigenetics that now he's exposed to an individual valued society? Mm-hmm. What happens to him? Does he turn more Swedish by being in America? Does he, you know, hunker down? And I tell you what I really understand now is people moving to the United States and never learning English. I totally get that.
Mm. Well, because there's no,
it's hard. Yeah. It's hard. And it's super lonely to do and put yourself out there. And when you can find an enclave of Spanish speakers or Chinese speakers or whatever, and just stick with your own, you will.
Right.
And what it really takes. So, you know, the old, I just think of like a redneck grandpa type, like, you're in America, learn English.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, I would love to see you in Guadalajara and figure out how to speak some Spanish, because you wouldn't, you'd say, where is the closest American hamburger restaurant?
And,
you know, that creature comfort kind of thing. So I think it's a sort of interesting shock to the system. So my kids,
it's generally just a hard language too, just from, well, you already sort of said that, but I was talking to some people yesterday with the kids saying how many ways or how many uses of the exact sounding words do we have? Like right, and right. And two of those meanings have the same spelling, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
Go right or you're doing the right thing. It's ridiculous. Like there are other ones too, like two and two. Can't remember the others, but
yeah, there's tons of them.
It's insane. What a crazy, complicated mess it can be.
And we talk to the kids about like Swedish rules or whatever as we're learning. We're like, okay, this is kind of weird. And then we always go, yeah, but think about English. Mm-hmm. Like, let's give some context. So one thing with language that's really interesting, and then I'll tell you about my kids doing this journey.
All right.
But one thing about language is not only like there's 100 ways to describe smells in Chinese, or at Australia, there's some interesting directions, like how directions are given in Aboriginal languages versus other languages, because they're just their context and how they live in the world. Mm-hmm. It's just different, right? And so there's lots of things like that, like you're experiencing something, so language follows that because of what you're experiencing. Mm-hmm. But there's also gender, and I think this is really intriguing, is so, you know, in America, if I say, hey, I'm hanging out with some friends, you know, Chris and Chris, you don't know if they're male or female, right? But in so many other languages, you have to give their gender, right? I'm hanging out with law, feminine word, right? Or mm-hmm. L, masculine word, or whatever it is. So you indicate in the way they talk, in most, quite a few languages actually, what gender a thing is. And then we have like the table has a gender, the chair has a gender, which is just so interesting that that's kind of the basis for languages, male and female mm-hmm. gender. And we don't do it so much in the States, right? But then Finland, you know, has this really interesting thing, which it's hard for me to even wrap my head around. They don't have the pronouns he and she.
Oh, well, that's because they're all see-through and they can't tell which one's who.
Right. So they're see-through. But also, like, so they have a law that you cannot name your child a gender-interesting name.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, like, if you can't name a girl Larry, because then when everyone speaks, they'll never get it right because there is no pronoun mm-hmm. that will say it's male or female, which is so intriguing. But then you look at their culture and their history and their equality between men and women, and it's really interesting. I mean, they had a, you know, woman head of state forever ago.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, blink an eye. So is it chicken and the egg? I don't know. Kind of interesting.
I don't know either. I know that, like you were talking about, we don't really have gender-specific words for, like, chair or whatever.
Right.
We just seem to have a lot of extra language that lets us then say more about the chair. And in some ways, that's good because you can say, all right, it's a brown chair that's perfect for, let's say, a lady's changing room. So you've basically said a bunch of different things that, A, it's feminine, B, it goes into this changing room, and C, it's a lovely chair. Like you've right. said all these things about the chair. Sometimes that leans us more toward too much descriptors can lead us toward negatively looking at lots of things. Right. Like you can say, well, you know, America has a black president. Okay. Simple enough. He's the president and he's black. You could say America has a tree hugging, liberal, dirtbag, high tax wanting, probably a Muslim black president. You know what I mean? Like somebody could go that far.
Right.
The people listening know that I don't feel that way. I'm making that up. I mean, this is what I've heard people say that. But my point is that because we have all that in the language, that has to contribute some. So if you're raising a kid and you're yeah. saying things like, I don't know, you know, Billy, go play with your trucks, and Susie, go play with your yeah. dolls, you're establishing.
And we dress them in certain colors. And,
right. You have all those things. But then you have all these English descriptors that, as they learn language and learn how English works, it's even more, isn't it? I this is totally me just farting in the wind, but it seems like what you're doing is you're compounding their, not stereotypes, but their understanding of a situation, because you can layer so much more on than just simply right. point to the truck and say, play with it. Because now you've layered on this other stuff like, well, that's what boys do. Boys play with trucks. And boys who aren't gay play with trucks, you know, whatever. Whatever your thing is, it seems like English is more likely to take you down a weird path.
Right.
Of specificity.
That's just parenting.
Is it? Okay. It could be.
Well, that's the nurture question is, you know, how do you impact their development? I think there's this crappy mixed bag of it's all my fault and none of this is my fault as a parent. Like, I helped create this, and wait, maybe I didn't. And it's hard to know. So my kids coming here, they are very American in their, of course, they were American until 3 months ago. They're still American, but that's all they knew. That is the boundary of their experience was in the country of the United States of America.
Right.
Everything in truth and reality was just what they knew and saw and how their school worked and the way their parents acted and, you know, yada, yada. Right.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they are put into a totally new system and their parents have brainwashed them completely to think everything's awesome. We play the song even to add to the brainwashing, but everything is awesome. And you're so lucky to be here. And isn't it amazing? And look how beautiful. And isn't it fun to learn this language? And isn't everyone nice? And we, I believe those things. I really do. But a little social experimenting is happening, let's be honest. And the kids in turn respond when people ask them that. And I think it's genuine, but I think it's led when they're like, I love it. Everything about here is perfect. Or it's so great. Abe's like, everything's perfect, except I wish they spoke English. That's what he said.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, most people speak English, except for the kids.
That's true, right?
Anyway, yeah, it is. It is true. They don't speak it normally. They speak it when you speak to them.
Sure.
But anyway.
I mean, yeah, our brother Matt basically knows English, but it's clearly not his, it's not his number one.
Native tongue.
No.
For sure. And so how this impacts them over time, I mean, we should do a show in 5 years and I'll tell you what this experiment did for them. Did it sort of intervene in the middle of the social experiment that is everyone raising a child anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. And we just artificially plucked them out of their system and put them in a new one and said, hey, let's see. And I feel like our family has made a lot of shifts and things by being here that I have wanted to have happen. Mm-hmm. But when you're just going along and everything's so familiar, and I really think this is true, you stop having to make decisions, right? Mm-hmm. When you go, which you probably don't go to the store, but if you went to the store.
I'd go to the store.
Probably not.
Sure, I do. I mean, I don't go shopping, if that's what you're asking. Like, I don't get a list and go buy everything. That's not me.
And what do you do there? You just go and pick up like a beer and walk out? Like,
no,
what
I
do
head.
You mean,
I
don't
head
go
to the.
Store?
I head to the. I'll go to the store. And like Nick and I just the other day went to a Target, a Walmart, and a comic book store. And yeah, in the Target, we went to the electronics section because we were looking for a cable he needed. And then we went to Walmart and got Subway because they have a Subway in there, so we got Subway. Mm-hmm. And then we went to the comic book store to find comic books. So we do
so
that.
So you're arguing shop. That that's going to the store
well,
and shopping.
Well, it is, but it's. I understand what you mean. So let's say, okay, Kim's version of shopping where she's got to get fruit and stuff for dinner and all that. No, I don't do that very often. I'm not trustworthy in that.
Have you ever?
Oh, sure. Of course.
But nothing on a regular basis.
Oh, not in the last 10 years or more. Because I don't care. Because it's first of all, I suck at it, and I don't remember to get the right thing, or I'll come home with like a box of this when she needed a box of that.
Right.
Like that's right. I am no good at that, so I'm not often asked to do it anymore.
Okay, so you're actually a perfect person to ask about this. If Kim said to you, I "Need you to go to the store, and I need you to get these 10 things. You got to remember them because there's no more paper left on the whole planet." So. Just remember these 10 things.
Wow. I like this caveat. The paper is no longer a thing
gone.
Caveat.
Boom. Right. And you have to go to the store. You are going to be like, where in the world are breadcrumbs? They make breadcrumbs. Am I supposed to find a bread and make them into crumbs? Mm. You would have to spend so much more time and energy accomplishing what she could do
in
blindfolded.
Seconds. Right.
It's because she's done it a billion times. Right.
Right. Like,
she's taken all of the decisions out of that experience. There's no more need to make decisions, which means there's no calories necessary to make that decision. There's no contemplating back and forth. There's no, oops, I hope I get it right. There's no emotional baggage. But when you go to another country, and if anyone listening to me has done this, and you have to buy groceries to make food at home for your family,
yeah,
it is like a marathon. Like, okay, let's hope. First of all, if it's in another language, you're like, I don't know what this is. I have to translate it. Then there's six options. What if I get the wrong one? I mean, it becomes 10 times longer than anything you've done where you're, it's familiar, right? Which I think there's people who would just never find that appealing, and others see it as a challenge, and others just see it as an annoyance, right? But that level of decision-making takes up time, right?
Yeah.
So when you can live your life really reducing most of your decisions, yeah. you get gas at the same place, you know where you get your tires rotated, like you've eliminated, I know where my doctor is, I know where the phone numbers are, I know who my tax guy is, right? Do you have new decisions you're making for basic stuff very
mm-hmm.
often?
Mm-hmm.
No, right?
The answer is no.
Which means you can fill all that time with lots of other stuff and be so busy your head's going to explode, right?
That's totally true. But I mean, isn't this just an argument about, what is the old phrase? Something is the necessity of, what is it? The need is the...
Invention is the mother of...
Necessity is the mother of invention. Same idea.
Right.
That's kind of not exactly. But the idea being that, okay, let's say Kim just went poof, disappeared off the face of the earth. Whoa, what happened to her? We don't know. And we've had time to grieve and everyone's trying to figure it out, but we really don't know. But we've got to get on with our lives. Children yeah. need to be fed, taken to school. The things that Kim is so good at that she tag teams on while I do other things, I would have to do them.
Like, yep.
Because what am I going to do? I just have to do them. Because that's the way it works, right?
Yeah.
She's gone. Nobody else is doing it.
You would be exhausted. And
I'd be totally tired. It would change my life fundamentally, but I would do it because you got to do it.
And eventually you would get good at it
yeah.
and it would come second nature and you could then put more in your life. But there would be a period of time where you could not do everything you can do now, 100%. Or you'd have to take some kind of drug to stay awake all the time.
Right.
Which, you know, people
they make
do,
those. They make those, yeah.
And so I have had this experience where I fundamentally have had to slow my life down in so many ways because I physically cannot get done what used to take me very little time in the past because it was so second nature. But what's so interesting, so I haven't had a dryer since I've been in Sweden. So I hang all our clothes up and there is something, and amen from anybody, but there's something so therapeutic about hanging up laundry. I can't even describe it. And it's a pain. Like you can't wear it for 2 days because it's got to hang and dry, you know, but there is this like, very rudimentary. I don't know what the right word is. Like my ancestors are like next to me kind of feeling like we are hanging our laundry. And then we've lived here 5 minutes and then of course the dishwasher broke. So we've been doing dishes by hand and I just haven't even told the landlord.
I heard about the marker chair, by the way.
You what?
Mom told me something about a chair that got all marked up.
Oh yeah. It's Pete. You got a permanent marker. Oh, yeah. We're going to be rebuying these people's houses back from. Don't tell them by the way. Anyway, it is interesting how much time that you have with your thoughts because you're doing repetitive like laundry or like, you know, washing dishes. Now, I do not recommend everyone go back in time to 1950 and have a gender inequality. That is not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is there's this really interesting, maybe lost therapy that was just kind of built into life that is no longer there and has been replaced by I can get so much more done, so I fill up that time. It's kind of like, you know, mm-hmm. if there's space, then it'll get filled.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like the way that's impacted our family is that there's nowhere to go but to sit down and have dinner.
Mm.
And my kids can now sit at the table for 20 to 30 minutes. And for many of you, you're thinking that is a miracle because kids never sit that long.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk and we practice Swedish and everyone talks about their day. And it's sort of like, I feel like we've gone back in time and we are in a really old farmhouse. So that helps.
It helps a lot, I think.
Yeah.
You don't have 50 neighbor kids banging on the door going, can Elliot come and kill a gopher with me or whatever?
Exactly. That's totally true.
Yeah.
So is this life, I want to live this isolated the rest of my life? No. But am I socially experimenting? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Which is like hyper-focus on the things I've always thought I wanted to make sure happened. The conversations, the dynamics, playing games, siblings playing with each other, building forts, all the stuff that maybe we imagine a childhood should be like. It's like we get this little chance to do it.
Yeah.
And then I got to hang up laundry. So we're not going anywhere.
Nope. You can still keep talking. Still. Yeah, exactly. And we've always made it a priority, and maybe given the external factors you're talking about, it's more difficult, but we've always made it a big deal that we, as often as humanly possible, we're all sitting down for dinner. Whoever lives in this house, we're all doing it every night. That's when we find out how school's going. That's when the best jokes are told. That's when the best food's eaten. Like, that's the time. And we've stuck really closely to that. And it's funny because I just take it for granted now because we just do it. Like, the kids tonight, we're all going to be at the same table. It's going to be the same as always. The only difference is one of the kids is now out on her own and doing the same thing somewhere else. But we're, you know, we're sticking to it. And then I'll go to a friend's house, a neighbor or somebody, and it's like dinner time or their dinner time or something. And I've got, you know, there's one kid on the couch eating a bowl of cereal. Another kid's not even there because he's off running around with his friends on their bikes. Somebody else isn't home from practice yet. Mom's, you know, probably won't eat because she's too busy running around picking up everybody's stuff. And the dad had to stay late at work or whatever. And finding out that that's common for them, like that's most of the time for them, not the, what's the word? It's not the exception. It's the rule.
It's the rule.
That seems crazy to me. Like, I don't know how you do it. I'm not judging it. I understand it. I get it. But I don't, that seems weird. So I guess that's just a point of you either make it a priority and have it happen, or if you're lucky enough, you can be in an environment where you can foster that more easily or facilitate it easily.
Right.
Maybe that's what the farmhouse in Sweden can do.
I don't know. Well, the thing is, we had sat down and had dinner every night in Utah, but it was so busy that it was like, hurry, quick, eat, run, we gotta go here. Or it was not enjoyable because I didn't have the time to spend on it. It really has to be a priority for people. And you know, Kim loves food and loves to cook, and it probably came pretty natural for her to create that ritual.
Agreed. Yeah. And her family was huge on that too.
That really helps. Yeah. However, it is the, not to toot our horns, because that's Jantelagen. We should not.
Yeah, that's illegal in those parts.
Think we're awesome, but it is one of the most researched points of a good family life and developmental needs being met is dinner every night. Mm. And so there are families where, you know, someone's a chef and they are never going to be home at dinner because they always have to work at night or they have jobs. It makes it impossible. And I've heard, you know, they do breakfast together. It doesn't have to be dinner, but there has to be some point of some ritualized connection. And we know this, that families and kids do so much better. I mean, you can look at drug rates, teen pregnancy rates. You can look at so many things and then just measure them against eating together as a family.
Yeah.
And it's one of the ones that will always rise to the top as a thing, because I think what naturally occurs from it, it's not some magical, like, well, we ate tacos together. That means something's infused because we all ate the same thing. It's that conversations happen that wouldn't otherwise, or there's a landing place that if there is a conversation that needs to happen, it's hard to have, there's a place to do it. You know, those type of things. So ritualizing your family life in that regard can be huge. Hugely beneficial for your kids. I think for me, it's that I don't resent having to do it anymore.
That's a good point.
Because I was so busy because I didn't have to hang laundry. I could just throw it in the dryer and get busy, right?
Yeah.
And I know it's not real life.
People
forever,
do this to their careers as well, right? Like, this is kind of a problem that can affect people in their work, because if they find they've got, like, in a way, getting more efficient at the thing they're doing is bad, because you're not then taking the efficiency gain or time gain from the efficiency and using it to relax or to come up with other stimulating things or whatever. You're just saying, all right, now I can fit in five more clients because I just carved 2 hours out of my day. So let's just fill that right up. And I get into that trouble all the time.
Right.
It's like, when I quit to do this full time, I was like, all right, I got this. No problem. And as soon as I did, I went, oh yeah, there were all those other hours I was putting in the full-time gig that aren't there now. So let's fill that up with a million other things. Right. And I kind of, there are times I really regret that. It's like, whoa, you know, why did I do that? Why didn't I take that time and just call it, geez, I don't know, reading time? Why didn't I use that to go to Wikipedia and learn about, you know, geodes or something? You know, other than just filling it, I don't know, it's a bad example, but just filling it full of stuff for no reason. Pretty common thing.
Yeah.
You know, people do that all the time.
Right.
To their detriment.
And yet, do they? I don't know.
Well, they don't. That's my point, is that at the end of the day, did I, by filling up that entire thing, what have I done? All I've done is make myself really tired. My brain can't do 500 things at once. now I'm locked in on these things. It's like I've established some reason why they have to exist. So now I have to do them. And it's like, it's, you know, there's definitely regret with that.
Yeah.
And the problem is when you do that though, it's valued, in this and other cultures because you now can do more. You are one guy doing more.
Yep. You're a producer
and everybody wants a productive guy. And, and it's rare that you, I don't know. It's hard to explain. I think it's worse when you do it to yourself, though, because there's something in the culture that may be expecting some of it, but we also demand breaks and we demand minimum work hour weeks and we demand, you know, they may differ around the world, but we still have these things where workers get an hour for lunch or a 15-minute break here and there or whatever holidays off or so many days, sick days a year, whatever it may be. Those are all expected. But when you're doing it to yourself, you're the guy, you're the boss and the employee. You have there is no mercy. Like you're your worst boss. Like I am my boss. I can say with some authority, my boss is a total dick because he just keeps shoving things in front of me and he just happens to be me. It's a weird place to be. I didn't expect that.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you also have your own narrator in your head as an employee and then as a boss that's saying, well, if we got to get this done, or what's this deadline? I don't care if you got a family thing. Jimmy, you got to get this done.
Yeah, get on it, boy. I don't pay you to just sit there, go to family things, and and it's me saying it, you know?
Right, right.
Annoying.
And, you know, I think the evidence that this is, you know, maybe it's a personality thing that sort of exists everywhere. I don't know. I mean, I haven't lived in enough countries to say definitively, but there are workaholics everywhere, and there are, you know, I'm driven to make sure, you know, I feel guilty or terrible if I take a break. But I think on the whole, you have the mentality in the United States is, you know, we take two weeks vacations a year, but then we have what's called vacation martyrs, which are like, well, I can't leave because I got so much stuff.
Right.
And so they don't even take the two weeks. Right. And then we look at Europeans and think, what is wrong with these people? They take 5 to 6 weeks off. Well, I will tell you, living in a place where there is only 5 to 6 weeks of sunshine, you love it and you use that as, you know, it is crucial for you emotionally to kind of get through, I would think, the winter. I really do, as I'm seeing, you know, it's dark and cold and whatever,
right.
That there really is a necessity for them in that regard. And they work really hard, everything but those 5 to 6 weeks, right? So that's the value. There's also a thing here which is interesting, and this kind of gets into the environment. How does it impact people? Like the darkness or the cold, or like take the Northeast where it's, or the Northwest where it rains a lot. Is there a personality? The South, is there a personality that comes from too much humidity, or Arizona, too much heat? You know, does some of that develop because of the physical environment that you live in? And I'll tell you a thing from Sweden that's really so obvious to me here is it is a national pastime to talk about things that are cozy and like lighting candles to be cozy, and like cozy is like the thing.
What's the Swedish word for cozy?
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to look it up. But it really is like really important, and there is a reason. So think of the times you feel like, oh, cozy. I want to wrap in a blanket and like watch a movie and eat popcorn. There's like a cozy feeling, right?
Yeah.
It's usually because it's snowing and darker or cold or rainy or something, that kind of depressing weather that you don't want to go out and do your yard work, or you don't want to, you know, run off. And that was, did you hear that?
Yeah. What was that?
That was Elliot flushing the toilet.
No. Great.
Good night, Elliot. It was so loud. Anyway, trust me, it wasn't me. I promise it was not me.
You know, Wendy does not flush and record.
Yeah, never. I just don't flush.
Yeah.
So anyway, the cozy is a thing. And it's because every day you feel cozy because the weather impacts that feeling. So they have interesting rituals around it. Friday is called, it's like Cozy Friday. That's what Fridays are here. Mm-hmm. So people all watch movies or play games. They go to their homes. They light candles. They eat chips and dip, which cracks me up to no end. They actually eat chips and dip. That's like a thing.
Wow.
And then they will maybe have, you know, Taco Tuesday on Friday. They have tacos on Friday. And it's like a national thing because they're getting cozy on Friday after a long work week. and probably the weather's sucky, so let's all hunker down and be cozy. Yeah. It is just a part of who they are. So, you know, I would assume every culture has some version of something that the weather creates for them, or the environment, or the, you know, quality of air. I mean, you think about when Utah's air gets so bad in the winter.
Yeah.
It's just norm for kids not to be allowed outside. You know, like that would not work in so many places. Be like, why in the world your kids should never be stuck inside that? Here in particular, they would die.
Yeah.
But they have, right? Pristine air. So you don't get it.
Right. But is the emphasis on, I mean, the emphasis is on cozy because it's a potentially a winter wonderland, depending on where you are. And you need to emphasize the positive of,
yeah.
It sends, you know, if anybody's got seasonal affective disorder and they move to Sweden, you're asking for it, right?
Yeah, you are asking for it. Yes. I think though, you're right. It's a positive spin, but I also think it's a natural inclination because I can tell you, like, you know, when you feel cozy and you'd be like, yeah, it's something you feel, right? They just sort of make sure it happens and it's sort of ingrained in what they do. And sort of like the 5 to 6 weeks off as, you know, vacation, it's something they do, but what are the consequences or benefits of that? That when you don't get it, you don't get how anyone could take that much vacation because you don't even take your 2 weeks. It's hard for you to think it's okay,
yeah.
But you don't get it. You've never lived here and had 6 weeks of vacation where you needed sunshine or the cozy thing. And I think that's what's kind of fun about anyone moving and having different experiences, or those who learn more than one language, is they start to feel more like a world citizen as opposed to maybe confined to what their individual culture tells them to do, which I think is why there's a lot of cultures that really love American stuff, because yeah. It's, you know, this exposure to this totally different world, like high school movies.
Yeah.
Like we have a lot of high school movies in America, right? Like,
well, we did. There was a trend there for a while. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But also like High School Musical or that kind of thing where it's just like,
or even we have gotten high school as it was such a weird place culturally in this country. It has such a,
yeah.
Like,
and it's unique in the world.
Yeah. I agree with that. It's like, you know, why was one of the most influential movies ever growing up? Why was it, Breakfast Club?
Right.
Well, because
it was in high school.
We've romanticized the high school experience in such a way that it's ripe for all the drama and storytelling and triumphantness and downfall and dumb teachers. You know, like all the stuff is there, especially if you're right. A kid, you can't wait to get there. And we get there, it's pretty mundane. There's really nothing great going on.
Right.
But movies,
it's high drama.
Oh yeah. It's high drama.
Right. And then it's chicken and the egg, right? Like Howard, what's his name? John Hughes. He just took what was
Howard Hughes.
Ripe for the taking. Yeah, not Howard Hughes.
He almost said Howard Hughes. That's funny. did, and he understood it better than anyone. I mean, he almost all his movies tapped into that thing, whatever that thing is.
Right, exactly. And he was able to harness it. Yeah. And it's because it's full of it. But here, and I think this is interesting, and we talked a little bit about sports last time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's another weird, interesting connection with sports. I've realized here the way they do school and sports is they're totally separated. So if I am interested in soccer, I'll play soccer and then I will join a club and compete and play and do all sorts of things. But it is not connected to my school.
Mm-hmm.
So you take the dynamic of a high school where all of your sports are being played and they're fellow students and the fans are fellow students of the students playing, and you're creating team loyalty and mascots, and you have all of those dynamics that is helpful in creating groups, right? So you have this group, the jocks, then you have the nerds, and then you have this, and the drinkers, and the heshers, and the whoevers.
The
and
heshers,
everyone has.
Wait, what are the heshers?
Oh, yeah.
Is that a thing?
That's a thing in the South. Adam always called the heshers. They're like the, shoot.
I love that. That's awesome.
I think they're like, you know, out in auto body class and then like smoking weed.
But
you know,
why were they called the heshers though?
I don't know.
It's a really fun word to say. Maybe it just
it
stuck.
Is hesher.
Yeah.
You're such a hesher. Like anyway, so they all have their little groups. And then, you know, here it's just not the same. They're doing academics in one setting and then they do sports in another. And you might be a jock out of school, but you're not necessarily one in school. Maybe that dynamic. So it's just a different thing. So when they watch High School Musics, or High School Musical.
High School Musical.
When they watch high school movies, it's like, weird. That's weird. You guys have that. Like, you know, they're still human and still have drama and, you know, friendship dynamics. But we have this extra layer of division and competitiveness and those are in and those are out, the popular and the not. So all of that, think of that development on a kid versus the other and how that impacts.
Well, I assume, you know, though, whatever that secondary school is in other countries, I say this because I have no idea, but they got to have some of that, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's not like it's everyone sitting in perfect rows and can't wait to learn calculus. It's got to be like some mix of, I think, honestly, it's like you said earlier, I think we're just loud about it. We're just loud about everything we do and how we portray culture. And, you know, there's a reason why people across seas will see, like, you know, that stupid Duck Dynasty show and go, that must be how all Southern Americans are. Well, they clearly aren't, but, but that's,
or Baywatch. That's all.
Or Baywatch. Sure. Baywatch. But because that's what we show. It's like, we're, yes, we're proud and we're loud and here it is. And then people are left to just go, well, I guess that's what everything, just like, you know, if I thought all the Swiss just ran around and yodeled and drank hot cocoa all the time, well, that would be a very limited view of the Swiss, wouldn't it?
And they would keep our money safe when we launder it.
Right. Yes. And all, you know, in Sweden, it's all meatballs and IKEA furniture. Well, of course it isn't. It's obviously much more than that. So I guess I just feel like we're such loudmouths about it.
We are. Oh, we are such loudmouths. And people like us for it or hate us for it. It's kind of, you know.
Sometimes at the same time, I've noticed.
Yes. There's a weird mixed bag. There's also this. So let me say about their high school. It's called gymnasium, which I think is so awesome. There's no sports in high school, but your high school is called gymnasium.
Wow.
Anyway.
Sounds like me and gym, but anyway,
I know. But they really separate. So at 16, you're legally able to stop going to school. And then you do a trade school or you go on to a sort of a college-bound high school. So you really don't spend those last couple of years in a setting where you're taking the same geology class with a bunch of other kids and none of you care about geology. You're really sort of planning your future at that point. This is true in England too. They call it university because college is when you're 16. So that they use university when you actually go to a four-year institution or whatever, right? So they are really like kind of growing up a little bit faster in that regard. There's like, what am I going to do with my life? I'm going to get a technical degree or a training in a Hescher. I'm going to be a Hescher. So I'm going to do auto body, whatever. So yeah, it's interesting and how that starts and ends and who comes up with the ideas, I don't know. But I mean, high school is this iconic part of American life, and yet, what in the heck is it?
I mean, I don't know what it is either. And you're sad to leave it, but you
need
hate
to.
It. But then you need to. Yeah, it feels like a microcosm of life. Like all of the, and maybe this is good because maybe kids have a. It's like a facsimile of what life is because there are bullies and there are nice people and there are smart kids and there are dumb kids or perceived to be dumb. There are stoner kids and angry kids and happy kids. And there's all these different kinds of things. And then you have authority there in the form of teachers and coaches and stuff. And occasionally one of those figures of authority will fall and make a horrible error of some sort. And like, whatever, the coach freaked out and punched a kid because the kid wouldn't listen to him or something. And, oh, wow. You know, you create all these opportunities to experience much of what life is going to be in a microcosmic four-year period. Right. And I think there's some value.
Some gravity to that.
There's some value to it too, right? Like, don't you learn from that? Don't you come out of that going, I mean, I know it's not exactly the same, but at least you can come out of there going, oh, yeah, well, my neighbor is acting like she's keeping up with the Joneses. That's not unlike Jennifer in high school, who constantly had to have the best clothes and shoes and would talk behind everyone else's back when she didn't. And this is like that, except, boy, the stakes are higher now because she's married and her husband hates her. And, boy, she's a rotten neighbor. You know what I mean? Like, it's like mini versions of what life is. That's how I've always seen it anyway.
Right. And is it necessary? I mean, has Europe grinded to a halt because they didn't have high school in the same way?
Maybe. Because they have grinded to a halt, kind of. A lot of those countries have. They're just kind of going, burr. They're just not doing anything. Like, nothing's going on. And then you got, like, you know, Italy, where half the country's really productive and the other half are just sitting on their A's.
Then the mafia is not taking the garbage out in the south of Italy.
They're not.
Worse.
I'm trying to remember where I just heard a big, long, cool thing about this. Oh, it was Planet Money is what it was.
Yeah.
They had this big thing about Italy and how this pasta factory turned things around in the part of the country where everyone sits on their butt all day. It's basically just an accountability lesson. But my point is that
Think about that for just a minute.
Yeah.
You are drawn to that conversation because that is your context for the world.
Kind of.
The bootstrap business is so ingrained in Americans. I've been thinking about this with taxes. Like, it is in our DNA to resist taxes. I don't care if you are on the left and you think taxes should be used for, you know, to help people, and you know, you see taxes as an important element. You still don't want to be taxed to death. I mean, you still have you're still American.
You're still kind of a conservative American. You just don't know it. You're just liberal underneath a pile of conservatism. And I don't mean that like Republican ways or like idiot ways.
No. But even you would see it. You want it responsibly spent. You know, there's still this idea that taxes. And I really, this is just my pet theory, is that Boston Tea Party was a thing, and it's sort of in us, and we learn about that very young, and we're like, yeah, they threw the tea in the harbor, right? Yeah. We still have this sort of team sports, you know?
Yeah. Even the most liberal among us still thinks that's a really important moment.
Right. And we'll see that there is a level of taxation that's too much, right?
Yeah.
I think everyone will get there. And I think, you know, that happens obviously in other places, but there's so much that this is why, again, this is such a complicated question and it cannot be answered in a silly show with a brother and sister talking. And that is, you know, what is nature nurture? What is epigenetics? What is, how does a culture influence you, or you influence a culture? You know, it really is so big. And that's what is so relieving to me, is that I left America and I realized no one else is becoming American. It is not one homogenous pot of yuck. Yes, there's a McDonald's everywhere you go, but that's it. There's a weird like cat meat factory next to the McDonald's in Egypt, and that's gonna be the way it is, because it's McDonald's is a highlight of something that's out there we want to think about, but we're still Egyptians, or we're still whatever. Anyway, I don't know why that's so comforting to me, but there's this nice balance of like, we're one world, but we're all really different and interesting. Like, we're still interesting.
Yeah, no, you want to stay. I don't want to be a homogenized freaking, you know, I don't want to be 1984 or whatever that book was. Yeah, 1984. I don't want to be that. I want to be, I mean, this feeds into this side of the American bit. We just want to, you know, everyone's unique, man. We're like we're snowflakes in a world of complicated snowflakes. And if you come over to our side, you can be even more of a snowflake and...
Right. That's
or
true.
Whatever. But anyway, it's fascinating stuff. Obviously, this topic's less about, hey, everybody, here's how to fix your problems. But it's also, I don't know, insight like this into this kind of thing, even the parts of it we don't understand, I think help people, because, you know, people are busy trying to figure out their place in the world, trying to raise their kids, trying to decide if they want to have kids. Like, why not, you know, the nature versus nurture, language versus culture versus all that stuff. That seems like it would help me if I was just starting out that way.
Well, and maybe this like can bring it on home to the individual, because I'm American, so I think about individuals.
Yeah, individuals. It's all about the individual.
And that is, if you feel like a fish out of water, right? Like, I don't really belong here. What does here mean? Does here mean this uppity neighborhood?
Right.
Does here mean America? There's 6 million expatriates. There are, I don't know why everyone is of those 6 million have left, but there are definitely those who feel more at home outside of the US than they do in. Mm-hmm. And that's probably true of other people from other countries, right? But ask yourself, like, if I'm struggling, is there an environmental thing that I can change? Or is it something internal that really is the problem? Mm-hmm. Or is it, you know, my values maybe aren't quite conducive to the place I live or the people I spend time with. Do I feel alone? Right. That feeling, you know, that there's aloneness that's okay. And you should feel alone a little bit every once in a while. It's healthy. Mm-hmm. But when you feel chronically alone and there's people around you and you should in theory be doing okay, then you got to ask yourself some questions that maybe are a little bigger than just, I hate my job.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or I want to lose weight. I think we hyper focus sometimes on sort of in micromanaging our physical small lives. Like, I'm going to buy a new dress.
Right.
Or I'm going to lose 5 pounds or whatever to try to change how we feel. Maybe there's bigger contextual things that are happening. And there is nothing like dropping yourself in another country and not speaking a language to strip away all the things you thought you knew about yourself.
Yeah, no, it's like being kidnapped in a way. It's like being kidnapped and thrown into some kind of camp where you don't know anyone and you don't know what they're saying and you don't know what you're supposed to be doing necessarily. I mean, you guys kind of have a plan, but it's the same. And this isn't under duress, which is a big problem. But
huge, yeah. That's
yeah,
helpful.
But I don't want to discount that. But it's still that fish out of water sensibility of like, whoa, I've got to do this thing now. And there's really nothing you can't just go, well, no thanks, and then just leave. You have to like figure it out, navigate, find your way. There's a lot of game theory in that, by the way.
There is. And there's a feeling of being alive that, you know, you got to have a little healthy fear in your life or a little or challenge. And I think game theory applies here where, you know, you're questing and you're finding ways to strategize and do new things, and you know the risk is pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's something for many people, not everyone, because some people just want to be cozy and hunker down, right?
Right.
But for some, if you're depressed and you don't know why, and you shouldn't be, right? Like my life's actually okay. Why would I feel this way? I think those are important sort of key moments where you say, "All right, what are we doing?" Because the midlife crisis, the you know trading in your wife for a new wife, getting a sports car, that kind of business is you're treating something with the wrong medicine, but it's so cliche because so many people go through it without sort of really doing the hard work of what it takes to figure out who they are, what they're doing, where they fit, what change needs to happen. Right. So that's a way we can apply it on an individual scale is, I don't know, look at your environment.
Yeah. Change it. Maybe see how you feel, even if it just means move your desk around. Sometimes.
Yeah. Or change the people that are in your space.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes that can be it.
Change your space, people. That's the lesson of today. Change the space, people.
Yeah.
That's going to do it. Listen, if you've only heard this episode and you're like, man, I just found this thing. What about all the rest? All the episodes are up on the feed as well as iTunes, as well as Stitcher. It's all over the freaking place. And if you want the individual files to play individually, which is kind of the same thing, you can go to frogpants.com/therapy. And catch it there. We still have some fulfillment to do. You guys are going to be getting all you guys who helped support us and back this project in the first place. There's a bunch of stuff coming your way, both physical and otherwise. So watch for that. What we do with it in the future, we'll make sure to let you know. But for now, enjoy the archive. And thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us. I've really enjoyed it. It's been a good time. So I think that's going to do it for us. Again, that address is frogpants.com/therapy. Thanks, Wendy.
You're welcome.
We'll see you guys next time.